Welcome to Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling. My name is Pat Poling. I'm the founder and CEO of Mara Poling. Happy to be with you this week for our second installment in our three-part series, Managing in a Recession. Last week, we talked about delinquencies. This week, we're going to talk about vacancy, and we'll finish up next week talking about rents. So managing in a recession, vacancy. What do we do if tenants leave? And what if we can't find new tenants to replace them? That's this week's conversation. As always, if you have questions, feel free to shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com. Please swing by the Learning Center at marapoling.com and check out all the great content we have there. That's marapoling.com. There's Podcast Plus episodes on the Multifamily Real Estate channel. You'll find copies of all the recorded content we've ever produced on the Multifamily Real Estate channel, all of our past podcast episodes, and you'll have the ability to sign up for new webinars as well as live events, which we hope to be revisiting and bringing live events back in 2021. As soon as we're able to do that, we certainly will. All right, so managing in a recession. As we said last week, if you're going to invest long in real estate, long in multifamily, which by the way doesn't mean long in an individual asset, but it means long in that asset class, you're going to own multifamily during a recession. So you need to design and acquire and operate an investment with that in mind, that not only are you going to have the benefit of growth and maturity, but you're going to own it during a recession and you're going to own it during a recovery. So how do you do all of that? And there's three concerns we have, right? One concern is, what if tenants just stop paying? Another is this week's topic, what if they leave, right? What if they leave, and what if I can't get anybody to replace them? And next week, we're going to talk about what if I have to lower my rents? What happens to rent? So why would someone leave? We're in a recession. Nationally, we've got a little less than 10% of the population collecting unemployment, probably more than that that's been affected. Let's be really conservative and say that there's twice as much of an impact in the rental community as there is in the home ownership community. So maybe 20% of tenants have some potential impact from unemployment, a family member, themselves, a roommate, whatever it might happen to be. So maybe 20% of tenants are stressed about this. So why would they leave, right? Everybody needs a place to live. Why would they decide to leave? Well, what if they just can't afford it, right? If their income has been cut and they're not receiving enough unemployment, or they don't have enough savings, or they don't have any other means of making up that difference, if they just can't afford the rent, well, I'm going to leave, right? So they might walk into the office and say, you know what, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. What can we do? And that's actually great. We're happy when somebody comes in and tells us that, because then we can work with them. Another thing that can occur, right, is someone gets behind, and maybe they're behind by half a month's rent. We'll work with them. What if they get behind by a month's rent? What if they get behind by a month and a half or 2 months' rent? And in some instances, right, we have some restrictions in place around being able to work through the normal processes, right, which would include late fees and evictions and those things. And they run up a pretty good balance. It's possible a tenant gets to a place where they simply say, I'm never going to be able to pay this off. Now, if they get there, we would still encourage them, come talk to us. Let's find a way to work the best solution out. Some of them do something called skip, right? They pack up and they just take off and they don't talk to us about it. Unfortunately for them, the problem is all of those charges still follow them. They're still responsible for that financially. They end up with a lot of really bad credit problems, which is such a sad thing. We don't want to see that happen to a tenant. So it's always best that if you have your own properties that you're managing, we would encourage you to do as we do. Communicate, communicate, communicate. If they have a financial issue, we want to help them in whatever way we can. Not telling us doesn't make it any better. Right? It's not like skipping makes all that go away. It actually makes it worse from that standpoint. Some are going to walk in and say, you know, the only way I'm going to get by is if I move in with some family. So I need to get out of my lease, or my lease is coming up for renewal. I'm not going to renew. I'm going to move. Right? And so they're gone. Maybe they found work. Maybe they found a job, but it's not here. Right? And they have to move in order to deal with that. There is always the eviction scenario, right? So if we have a tenant that just flat out won't work with us, doesn't talk to us, won't engage, depending upon the jurisdiction we're in and what type of property it is and a number of other factors, there may not be any restrictions on the eviction. We'll go ahead and move forward, and we'll get in front of a judge. And, you know, we think it's completely appropriate for us to be able to go to a judge and say, we've provided a nice, clean, safe place for this person to live, and they have not paid us. That was the bargain. It's time for them to move on. In the same way that we think it's appropriate if we failed to provide them that nice, clean, safe place to live, and they were paying their rent, that they can go to a judge and say, this property owner's not treating me the way they should. So we think it's very appropriate for both tenants and landlords to be able to go to the courts when there's a dispute and say, here's what the issue is, and then we have faith in that process that it gives us a solution. Generally speaking, if tenants don't pay and have no other reason why, then we'll be granted that eviction. Well, all of that is great, I guess, from the standpoint that we're able to move from having a tenant in the unit that doesn't pay rent, but now we have an empty unit. So how do we get new folks in? What if after we get those people out, what if we can't find a new tenant? You know, this is a challenging time, right? Recessions are a difficult economic environment. What if we can't get tenants to move in? Well, we invest in Class B assets. We like Class B for a whole host of reasons. I would encourage you to go back and listen to prior content that we've generated about the Goldilocks class. We've got some great webinars about it as well. One of the things we like about Class Bs is the insulation we get by being sandwiched between A's and C's. Right now, there are C's that are filling up, right? Tenants that are stressed in a B might move out and move to a C for a cheaper monthly rent, right, to save a few bucks. So C's are bursting at the seams. And in doing so, actually, there are C's that are moving rents in a positive direction. A's, on the other hand, are bearing a significant brunt of this downturn, and of any downturn. Now, if you think about it, the type of tenant economically that would rent an A, a luxury apartment, may not be the kind of tenant that's actually directly financially impacted by a recession, and certainly by this recession, right? Do we have, a waitress or a bartender, or, you know, a cashier at a retail store? Do they live in an A property? There absolutely are folks like that that live in A properties. Generally, though, because A's are significantly more expensive than B's in terms of rent, we're going to see a different economic group that's going to live there, right? Possibly have more professional careers, larger incomes, those kinds of things. And they may not be as directly impacted by the recession. However, there are also the folks that might look when their renewal comes up and say, do I really want to pay this $300,000, $500,000 a month premium for this property when there's a very nice Class B property right down the street that would actually be more economical for me? And maybe that's what I ought to be doing right now. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing A's move, And we're picking some of that A traffic up. So that's one of the things that's been very beneficial. And again, it's by design, right? By investing in a Class B asset. There's also been new tools developed over the last few years, which everybody has used, but have really become very important now. And those are things, the digital tools that are out there, not just digital advertisements and so on and search, but photos and digital tours and the digital processing of applications and leases and so on. It is much more efficient these days for someone to be able to find a place to live and really explore it and understand it without ever physically having to be at the property. And when they do come, to be able to have a very targeted kind of experience in terms of touring their specific unit that they're going to lease. That has allowed us during this recession so far to actually improve on our vacancy numbers. We've actually seen vacancy go down, which is not the norm in a recession. Normally in a recession, you'll see a spike at the beginning of the recession, and then it begins to settle as the A's and others kind of move around. We really never saw the spike this time, right? We've simply continued to see occupancy improvement and vacancy reduction. And we think part of that is, in particular during this recession, there's really a heightened sense of value in home. And yes, we provide people with a place to live. I always find it interesting when you hear people speak and they talk about their house and others talk about their home. And those really are two different thoughts. And while we provide people a house, if you will, a place to live, it is their home. And home is very important these days, right? We work from home, many of us do. And we spend a lot more time at home. We're heading into the winter season. We're going to spend even more time at home. So having a home that we enjoy, that we value, that fits our lifestyle, that we feel safe in, that's clean and well-maintained, a nice, quote-unquote, home, there's a lot of value in that. And I think that's part of what the Class B space is experiencing, because in general, Class B assets have not seen any significant shift in vacancy. Now, next week, we're going to talk about rents. One of the reasons there hasn't been any significant shift in vacancy is the way rent has been managed. For example, on our renewals, when a tenant comes up for renewal, we have been providing some concessions, some incentives for tenants to renew. Normally, we see about half of our expirations renew. So if we have 10 leases at a property that are going to expire this month, we would think 4, 5, or 6 are going to renew, which means 6, 5, or 4 are going to vacate and move on. And those have always been good numbers. We've wanted those numbers to be a little larger so that we had 5, 6, 7 people renew and a smaller number that would move out. And one of the ways we've done that is to provide some incentives. And those of you that have your own assets may have done something similar. And if you're an investor in syndications, that may be something you'd want to chat about with your sponsors. Hey, how are we managing renewals? What are we doing? We have found that a very small amount of incentive, and we're talking modest, well within the amounts we budget every year, has been sufficient to keep those numbers on the renewal side where we are targeting for them to be. So that's a really great explanation in my mind of what goes on in a recession around vacancy. The question, though, at the beginning was, right, we're talking about how to manage in a recession, and the topic is vacancy. So how do you manage vacancy, right? If people are going to leave and if they're not going to renew, you're going to end up with some vacant units. You're going to have some vacancy. And all the things I described about buying a Class B and so on, those are great. But how do I actually put myself in a situation where I don't just survive recessions. And that's one of the things I think can be misunderstood when we talk about having an asset that performs throughout the entirety of the economic cycle. When we get to the recession, it's not just we're hanging on for dear life by our fingernails. We want to perform during that time frame. We want to be healthy. We want to be in a position where we actually have options and opportunities, because others may not have positioned themselves that way. And if there's an opportunity to pick up some assets that are good, solid assets, but simply weren't positioned correctly, we might want to take advantage of that. And we can't do that if we've got challenges in our own portfolio. So how do you do that? We do that by stress testing assets during the acquisition phase. So long before we ever get to a recession, and remember, we know we're going to own during a recession. So it's not a question of, well, what if a recession happens? It's simply a question of when it gets here. We've actually been expecting a recession for the last couple of years, simply because we've had such a long period of growth in the country. Well, it's finally here. It was precipitated by this external event, but the recession is finally here, if you will. So we've been planning with every acquisition for how we'll deal with that. And that means stress testing those assets. And there are stress tests that lenders use, and they're good stress tests, right? They're about ensuring that there's enough operational cash flow generated to not just cover debt service, but to cover it with a decent cushion, 25%, 30%, whatever it might happen to be, right? You'll hear that referred to as the DSCR, or the debt service coverage ratio. Another is debt yield, which is a similar kind of term. Essentially, it looks at the amount of cash that can get generated relative to the size of the loan, so that we can see what kind of return we can generate. And how do you improve those numbers? How do you make them healthier? Well, you do that by either having less debt, right? So a smaller loan to value, or by having improved performance, right? So either having higher revenues or lower expenses. And those are the items that will give you greater and greater cushions there. Now, we have a third stress test that we add, and it's highly correlated to the two I just mentioned, but it's one that helps us think about the actual kinds of challenges we're going to have during a recession, and that's break-even occupancy. And so break-even occupancy is what you think it is, right? It's the amount of occupancy that we need to have so that we generate sufficient revenue to cover all of the operating expenses, because those are cash, right? Got to write checks for all those. And the debt service, right? So the principal and interest payment to the lender, and the lender required capital reserve, and anything else that's involved in terms of actual dollars that have to be paid out from that standpoint. And what we want to see when we calculate that number is we want to see that the level of occupancy that we have for break even allows us to withstand a 50% to as much as a 100% or more increase in vacancy above what the historical high vacancy has been. So let me walk you through what that means. So we go to look at acquiring an asset, and part of the research we're going to do is we're going to look at what the occupancy performance has been at this asset over time. Now, for some assets, we might have 15 years of data. For others, we may have only 5 or 6 years. We're going to look as far back as we can. If you can look back 15 years, you're going to see the spike from the 2007-2008 Great Recession. So let's say we have an asset that currently is 6% vacant, right? So it's 94% occupancy. And we look at the concession data and the others, and maybe there's another 2 points there, right? So it's 8% total vacancy, 92% occupancy. But we can look back historically and see that there was a peak of 12%, right? That there was a spike during a recession there was a spike of 12%, meaning that this asset, the quote-unquote worst it's performed in that period of time, was a 12% total vacancy, or 88% occupancy. Well, we want to be in a position where we don't just have a break-even at that 12%, that would really be cutting it close. We want our break-even to be able to handle a 50% increase, right? So a 50% increase on 12% would be 18%, to a 100% increase, right? Which would be 24% or more, and still be able to meet all of the cash requirements that we have. And so what that would look like, right? So 50% of 12% would be 6% added to 12, that's 18%. So we would need to have a break-even occupancy of 82%. That would be the minimum number. We would love to see it lower than that. Generally speaking, the assets we acquire fit somewhere in the high 70s at acquisition. So 76, 78%, something like that. Some are lower. And then they trend down so that what we see fairly quickly, and it comes about because of the growth in the rent rolls on the asset. Remember, these are value-add assets. So as we grow that, we generate more NOI, generates more cash, and we see those numbers drop into the 60s, meaning that we could withstand twice as much vacancy as the property has had in its near historical term, at least as far as we can tell, and we would still generate enough cash to be successful. Now, does that mean we're generating our 8 or 10% cash flow back to investors? No, it's not. During those few months when you might see that kind of a spike, you wouldn't be. Now, again, keep in mind, we're talking about a spike that is 50% higher to 100% higher than the spikes that we've seen in the past. So it would truly need to be something extraordinary to get us into that position. And that number, as well as the other stress tests, really does two things. One, it puts some guardrails out so that we aren't over-leveraging or purchasing underperforming assets that really aren't going to be healthy throughout the entirety of the economic cycle. The other thing that it does, and this is probably the more important piece, is it lets all of us sleep well at night. So if you're an investor, whether you invest with a sponsor like me, and maybe you are invested with us, or you have your own portfolio of assets, do not underestimate the value of a good night's sleep, of being able to be confident and comfortable that the hard-earned money that you've invested, whether it's in a single family or a duplex that you own, or in an individual syndication or a fund like the Total Return Fund, that those dollars are safe and secure, and that we will be able to perform throughout the recession, because as surely as there is a recession coming, there's always one coming, recessions are followed by recoveries, and recoveries followed by periods of growth, and growth followed by a period of maturation. And as we are today in this recession, we can look forward that over the next number of quarters, a few quarters, many quarters, heck, it was 10 years this last time, that we will have a period of recovery and growth and maturity. And during those time frames, assets that can perform in a recession can truly outperform when we move into those phases. So vacancy is nothing to be afraid of. It's part of owning properties. One of the reasons we like investing at scale is the larger the scale is, the more accurate that forecast of vacancy can be, so that the tolerances and the variances get tighter and tighter. If tenants leave, while we don't want them to leave, some are going to leave. And we want to replace them, but we're not always going to be able to. If we've purchased the right asset and stress tested it correctly, then we aren't going to have to worry that that's going to sink the ship. Is it going to be not fun? Sure, it's not fun, right? We would love to see the assets performing really well, but we want to see them healthy. Excuse me. We want to see them healthy throughout the entire time that we own them, and this stress testing allows us to do that. So we think this is a great answer to the question of how you manage in a recession, although the answer is you manage it during the acquisition. So I hope you found this week's session valuable. Join us next week when we talk about managing in a recession, rents, and what happens to rents in a recession. Can you move them up? Do you hold them flat? Do you have to lower them? And the answer is yes, and we're going to talk about all those three different scenarios. Please go check out the Learning Center at marapoling.com, marapoling.com. And if you aren't subscribed, please subscribe through whatever platform it is you're joining us on this week. And join me next week for another episode of Multifamily Real Estate Investing presented by Mara Poling.